the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Well, one of the sectors that some would argue the Apple tax money could go towards is extra funding for childcare. Our next guest has built a successful business out of caring for children. But it was her own tough upbringing that lit the fire in her belly. Karen Clintz, founder of Tigers Childcare, a multi-million euro business, joins us. Karen, you didn't start out in childcare. You did a diploma in marketing and got a job in a software company. Did you like that?
I didn't really love it, if I'm honest. I kind of found it quite kind of mundane, probably for my ADHD self. It wasn't going to keep me going. I suppose, though, I probably would have kept on with it and kept on with the career had I not been made redundant. I found myself made redundant at 20. Just found out that I was expecting my first baby very young. And that was probably a bit of a crossroads for me in deciding really what I wanted to do, taking stop and maybe just changing things a little.
So you had a couple of curveballs there at 20 all at once, and that sort of made you think about things differently, did it?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I was 20, pregnant, redundant, and a baby on the way, and I had to do something to support myself and my daughter. I think as well, like, you know, a lot of stereotypes around having a baby when you're young, and I didn't want to become one of those. People were kind of judging me, I suppose, you know, having a baby, being young, and I was really determined to not turn out to be what people may have thought the journey would be. So I kind of took stock, took a look at my life, said, what do I want to do? What's going to suit me being a young mum? Always loved children. And so I went back and I did a course in special needs, and I got myself a job in St. Vincent's Primary School as a resource teacher. I took up a maternity leave and went into that role. And from the day I started, from day one, I knew this is what I have to do. I just loved it.
And where did the idea then for Tigers Childcare come from? What thought did you have?
I was working the school just over a year, and I could kind of see the stresses parents were under collecting children of after school age. So kind of people running down to the school, and maybe they had a child in junior infants and a child in fourth class, and they were sitting around the schoolyard in the cold for an hour. And I had, my family when I was young had emigrated to Australia. So we, after school in Australia was just commonplace. Myself and my sister had gone to after school. We'd really enjoyed it, and there just didn't seem to be that kind of concept in Ireland. So I approached the principal that summer and I asked him, you know, what he thought of the idea. He thought it was great. Peter Malumbi was such a good advocate for me. And he kind of said, look, if you want to start that here, we'll give you the classroom for free for the first year until you get it up and running. So I then went into my mum, who was the bank manager at the time, asked her to give me a little loan. It was a 5,000 euro loan. Went down to Smith's, kitted the place out, and tried to get a few names in on the door. So we opened the door kind of on day one in Glasnevin, September 2002. And we had three little boys attend then. And that's really where it all began.
So you went into your mam who worked in the bank for the loan. Was that a tricky conversation?
No, do you know what? She's kind of, my mum's always been a bit, and I've tried to follow in her footsteps with my own children. She's never told her it's a silly idea. She kind of would say, yeah, no, go. Yeah, that sounds good. Give it a go.
Did you feel any sense of judgment at that time about being a single mum?
Oh, yeah, I think you do. Like, I also looked particularly young for my age. So even though, you know, I was probably 21 at the time, I probably looked about 16 or 17 pushing the buggy around. So absolutely. And, you know, there's always judgment. And I think...
How did it show itself?
I think, you know, the same thing, the looks you get in the shop, the, you know, you'd often have people correct you. I can remember Ella climbing up on a wall and me holding her hand and someone coming over and telling me how dangerous that was. And, you know, just people having judgment, I suppose, on you. You do see it. And I think probably my biggest lesson to people from my journey is, you know, there are, of course, stereotypes in your journey of life, but you don't have to fill into them. You can kind of break them all. So, to be honest, I've always been a person that really wasn't bothered too much by what people thought about me.
You come across as someone, Karen, who deals with curveballs that get thrown at you very well, and you're a very determined person. I mean, it mustn't have been easy when you were retraining and doing your degree, and you were, did you have to go to college by day and work in the evenings, that kind of thing?
It was the opposite, actually. So I was working in the day. At that stage, I had I went back to university. Probably, I think my son was born. So Luca, the 6 years between Ella and Luca. And it was a juggle. So it was very much kind of going to college two nights a week, working in the daytime, and then juggling, you know, assignments, study, you know, really set routine of 6 hours on a Saturday morning, getting up, getting the kids ready, getting them occupied, head in the books when they went to bed at night, head in the books again. But yeah, no, it was tough. Learning something you love is easier, though. So when you have a passion for something and you've been doing something for a long time, they sit easier when it's something you're so passionate about.
So going back to the start, you were originally from Castleknock, but when you were quite young, the family moved to Australia.
Yeah.
Was that a very formative experience for you? What was it like?
Yeah, I suppose it was an incredible adventure when you're heading across. I think I was six when we went. Dad actually worked in RTE. He was working in the sound department there. And at the time, I suppose, I think Ireland was probably ahead of the posse in relation to where Australia was. So he got a job across in Channel 10 and we all emigrated across. And yeah, it was exciting times. But there were challenges as well. My dad wasn't very well. He suffered badly with his mental health, with addiction problems. So there was definitely challenges in Sydney as well. But I think, yeah, it was very formative.
With those difficulties that your dad had, was it a very tough family environment to be in?
Yeah, would have been very, very tough growing up. I mean, we had very happy times as well, because I suppose coming with that personality comes the wild and the wonderful. So he was great as well, as but if he was suffering, if he'd gone into a bad spell, yeah, there could be violence at home. There could be, you know, not towards myself and my siblings, but towards my mum. And we would have had to witness a lot of that. Would have had to witness my mum kind of trying to hold it all together, I guess, to make sure that we didn't feel it as much as we could.
And how bad did that get? Was that something that you saw regularly?
Yeah, I suppose towards the end of that journey in Australia, my dad's mental health had deteriorated quite drastically. I suppose when you're a child, you don't really process it like you do as an adult. So, you know, we were so well looked after by our mother that, you know, we were kind of shielded a lot from some of it. But you kind of knew it was happening. It's funny, as a little child, I suppose this definitely has impacted myself in my work. You kind of know, you just go into school, you get on with it. Hopefully today will be a better day. Hopefully things will be different at home. And you just move along, and you, once it's done, you forget about it. You know, children have a really good way of doing that, of just kind of getting through tough things. And we did. And I suppose it might have been very different if we didn't have a sew-together mum at home.
But it was an extraordinarily difficult time and experience for her. I mean, was she ever physically badly beaten? Would she have had to get medical care?
There would have been a couple of times. To be honest, I suppose when you're a woman and you're going through that, you're dealing with the domestic violence, a lot of times if you can, you hide it. But there would have been times, yeah, where she would have had to go to hospital. I suppose one particular time, I suppose a bit of a perfect storm at the end of our living over there. But yeah, she would have ended up in hospital. And I suppose my dad, when he would come to reason, would feel awful about these things. And then, you know, I suppose then he could go into a deep depression or go into self-medicating. And then that would have been quite difficult as well. So my mum would have been dealing with what she was going through, but then dealing with the fact my dad would be quite sick afterwards.
And how did you process that as a child growing up? Because did you find yourself strangely conflicted? Because it wasn't a clear-cut case of saying, You didn't love your dad. You didn't like your dad. You saw what he was doing, and it was all black and white. Because you said he was great at other times. Did you feel a sense of what's going on? He's not such a bad person. I do actually love him, but I can see what's happening here.
Yeah, it's hard to separate both. I think my mum did a really good job in that, and later when she separated, she did a very good job at that. And now that I'm a single mum and I'm not with Ella and Luca's dad, try to kind of keep that going. She kind of never badmouthed him. She kind of reminded us of the good times that we had from him and explained that he was very unwell. You know, and that he had such good points and was incredibly talented. I think as a child, did I process it? Probably not. You're in such a whirlwind. You don't really know what's going on. You're putting one step in front of the other. You know, you're just trying to kind of get on with things. I'm lucky, I suppose, I've been born with quite a sunny disposition. So I've always been sunny side up. So the bad days would go, the good days would come in, and you just would kind of try and crack on with it.
And was it those events that in some way triggered the family's decision to come home, or what happened?
Yeah, I always say, if I wrote a book, people probably wouldn't believe it. But my mum had gotten a job, a part-time job. She felt quite isolated when we first were in Sydney. So she'd gotten a job working in the bank, in National Australia Bank. And in that bank, she was working there, and there was a large bank robbery at the time. Four guys came in with guns when the bank was closed up, kind of lay everyone down for a bank robbery, called for the manager who had frozen. And my mum was the head teller and had the codes to the safe. So they took her hostage for the 25 minutes it took for the safe to open. And of course, at that time, kind of, I suppose we'd only returned from a holiday down in the Gold Coast where things had been quite bad at my dad. And she said her only thing in her head at that time was, if something happens to me right now, my children are very far away from home, very far away from the rest of their family, and my husband wouldn't be able to look after these children. So very shortly after, she planned a trip home to Ireland, which was originally, really, we were planning on just coming home for an extended holiday, but she knew in her head we were never going back. So she came home. We had gone to stay with her grandparents. She told them what was going on, and the marriage ended. And I suppose, you know, that was the start of a new journey for us and our family.
Did you have a sense when you look back at that time that there was a whole comfort blanket for her and for the rest of you about being back in Ireland and close to the rest of family?
Oh yeah, there's nothing like family, I think, in those times. My grandparents were phenomenal. You know, they kind of rearranged the house. We all had our own bedrooms. They helped my mum get back on her feet. They supported her while she was working to save to get herself a house back in Ireland. I mean, we literally left with the suitcases that we left Sydney with. You know, every other possession was left in Sydney. So it was a real kind of start over again. But when you're a child, actually, you know, and it shows you that the possessions aren't important. You didn't care. We were home with our cousins. We were home with our aunties and uncles. So, you know, there was a big excitement and comfort around that. And I think that kind of got us through what probably from my mum was much more traumatic.
Not an easy time for your mother, even when she came back, because she found herself, although she had her extended family, she had you, your brother, your sister. She was on her own in a sense, and she was going to have to pay the bills and do all of that.
Absolutely. She was working in the bank at the time, and I suppose myself and my sister, but then my brother has special needs. So that doesn't make things any easier. We had great supports around us. You know, we really did. My mum would go to work. She was also selling insurance door to door two nights a week. She was back in college trying to move up the ladder in the bank, doing her financial exams another two nights a week. And so there was kind of like a timetable of people coming to mind us all at the house, my granny, a couple of aunties, a couple of friends, until we got it old enough to be able to hold it a little bit more ourselves.
Your mum sounds like an extraordinary person.
She was incredible. I suppose she's very inspirational, and it was proved to myself, my sister, that if you put your head down and you put in the work, you really can get to where you want to go. You know, she really did do well. And of course, you know, that was an inspiration. But the type of parent she was, you also didn't get away with anything. So, you know, those usual teenage lions on a Saturday, my mum be in your bedroom at nine saying, "What are you doing? Get out of bed." Like, what are you doing sleeping? So, you know, you didn't get to kind of lie down and relax. She had you up and working and earning your own money.
She was working and driving her way through it, and she was going to make sure that you guys did the same thing.
Yeah, she'd no sympathy for you. She used to, you know, if you had a little cry about what was going on, she'd say, "Well, what's your choices here now? You're just going to cry and moan about that." She said, "If I had been angry with your dad, I would have gotten nowhere. Now you put it in your engine, you let it drive you forward. That's what you do."
When you reflect back on your own family and that experience in Australia, I presume maybe what was going on within the family with your dad, other people wouldn't have known. No one would have known. So when you went off on a holiday in Australia down to the Gold Coast, you know, would anyone have had a sense that this was going on?
I think people close to the family would have known, because they would have picked up the pieces of episodes in Ireland. But no, on the outside, like I always say, if there had been social media back in that day, we would have had the picture perfect Instagram, beaches in Sydney, beautiful home, you know, lots of money, doing all these trips people only dreamed of, you know, but you can't always believe what's at the surface level. That's, you know, that's had a real impact on me in the type of care that I want to give the children that I care for, because you always get the cases that are very transparently difficult coming into you. But actually, every child that walks through your door, you do not know what the difficulties that lie behind their whole door are. And so, you know, when I look at kind of resilience and what drove me and what got me through those tough times, you know, all anyone needs is a couple of good adults around them telling them they can do it. And so I try and instill in the culture of what I'm doing that we can be those adults every single day when the kids come in the door. We can be those people that tell them they're brilliant, that build their confidence, that tell them they can do it, even when we might not know what's going on at home.
The business has gone from strength to strength. How many locations do you have now, Karen, and how many staff?
Yeah, so we've 22 services. We've nearly 500 colleagues. We're on a big acquisition journey at the moment, so we've a good, strong pipeline of about 11 new services by January of next year. So those numbers keep growing.
And a lot of that is from acquiring businesses.
Yeah, it's a difficult sector at the moment. So acquisition is probably easier than opening greenfield because staff are so scarce on the ground. So at least if you acquire the business, you acquire the people.
And none of it happens easily. When you look back on the early days of the business, were there any particularly tough times? Did you find you were sort of borrowing from Billy to pay Jack or hand to mouth at times?
Absolutely.
With the
there was a couple of those times, particularly difficult 2009, the Christmas of 2009. You know, we were really hit hard by recession. We were having parents come in kind of two at a time saying, look, you know, we our jobs are gone and we can't give you any notice. We won't be back next month. And that was particularly difficult. Christmas that year, I couldn't make the wage bill. I had to call in some favours to try and keep the business going. My mum, luckily at that stage, was retiring from the bank at that Christmas, so she came in to manage the money after that, thankfully. So it's not my strongest point.
Your guardian angel was there.
Absolutely. So she kind of came in, I suppose, helped me get that little loan together to be able to get across the Christmas period and get back on my feet.
And she has been with you, along with your sister as well, in the business. Does your mum still work in the company?
My mum's now retired, but she is still on the board. She still has a real active role in the goings-on of the company and the advice. So it's quite funny because my sister is managing director and she's probably the organisational brain behind getting everything done. But she's quite quiet in the background. She's quite strict rules. We do not talk about work outside work. But my mum would talk about work all day, every day, if she possibly could, if my sister didn't shut her up. So
if the three of you get together, your mum's talking about work, you're talking about work, and your sister's trying to get the two of you to shut up.
Exactly. But yeah, my mum still has a real passion and a love. I suppose she's been really there through the whole growth. It was hard for her to retire. We were though, and actually she probably spent the first 2 years of retirement saying, anything that was going on, I could come back and help with that. And me saying, Mum, you need to just retire now. You've worked hard enough to be able to enjoy some downtime. But she does. She really loves it.
The sector is in a kind of a strange place because so many of the service providers are busy. The population is growing and all of that. But costs are rising. You do get you get the, part of the process is state funded. But I think that there's a battle at the moment because while costs continue to rise, the state funding isn't rising in accordance with that. And it's putting more and more pressure on businesses that in theory should have lots of people coming in the door and everything should be fine.
Yeah, so it's definitely a difficult market to operate in the moment. I suppose the main crux of the difficulty is actually around staffing, paying conditions, and they have a knock-on effect on everything. So our biggest cost in our business is our staffing, and that cost has hugely escalated because when you're all fighting for the same small labour force, you know, obviously the cost of that labour force goes up. And I suppose there's been a failure to recognise the true cost of that labour when we're being funded. And a lack of labour means a lack of places. It means that we can't expand the sector, which means that parents, from an access point of view, find it difficult to still get childcare places. And then even services such as my own, if you're lucky enough to have a childcare place, you may be dealing with your service giving you a phone call to say, look, we can't open today. We don't have the staff ratios in place to be able to operate.
Do you ever take the time to sit back and marvel a bit at how far you have come from when you lost your job in the dot-com boom back in the software company?
Yeah, you do get moments. I think there's been like definitely little moments along the way, you know, that you do sit back and you go, wow, this is something more than I ever dreamed of. But actually, at the end of the day, I'm still that 21-year-old girl who started the business out. There's not too much about me has changed. I'm still working with pretty much the same, you know, rugged team around me. And we all keep each other humble. I think if I was to start getting airs and graces about myself, Trace Noonan, my ops director, wouldn't be too quick about putting me back in my box and reminding me this has been very much a team effort.
Well, Karen, you've done so much and come so far, and congratulations on all of that. Karen Clintz, founder of Tigers Childcare, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks a million.
If you've been impacted by any of the issues raised in the conversation, you can go to rte.ie/helplines for more information.